I'd like to go ahead and call the special public hearing for the Planning and Zoning Commission on Monday, December 12th to order. May I have a roll call, please, Mrs. Burns?
Yes. Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
I am here. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Present.
Mr. Stanton? Not here. Mr. Strodman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Thank you. We have a quorum. We have 8 responding.
Thank you, Mrs. Secretary. Approval of the agenda. Mr. Zinner, is there any changes to our big agenda?
No, there aren't.
Lengthy. Good, good.
There are not.
Thank you. With that, we'll go ahead and go into our special public hearing section. Case 16-110, which is the Unified Development Code adoption process. As everyone here remembers, and for the audience, we were working on 5th and 6th, and we're not able to complete it at that time, and so it's been postponed a couple times, but here we are to finish that. So, commissioners, I will open the floor up, and we would like to have any amendments. There is a motion and a second to approve 5 and 6, and we're making amendments to that motion. So if anyone would like to start, like Mrs. Russell, we will start with Mrs. Russell.
I would. Actually, I have 3 that I'll just get started with. The first one is just for some clarity and easy reference on page 323 in section 29.5.2 on the table, approved procedures table. I'd like to add a line for, I move to add a line for a demolition permit below building permit with the appropriate notations.
Repeat that. Excuse me, one last time.
Reference to chapter 6.
29.5.2.
Yes.
Page 323.
I'll second.
Ms. Russ, would you mind? Did you want to?
Yes, I was.
Would you please finish, Ms.
Move to add a line.
Oh. Add a line for a demolition permit below the building permit line with the appropriate notations.
Thank you.
It's Monday. We're not used to doing this on a Monday.
Then I'll second.
Motion has been made and seconded to add demolition, I guess, as a category under the building permit section under, it's labeled procedure, I guess it is.
Approved procedures table.
Yes.
Just point of clarification, we had discussed those notations, including a reference to chapter 6 to point people in the right direction. Do we want to...
That'll actually in the section column. So you'll have the procedure column will indicate demolition permit. The section column will reference chapter 6 of the code.
Okay.
And then we will have it is the Department of Community Development is the decision-making body on that, with the Historic Preservation Commission being a review body.
Okay. A motion has been made and seconded. Commissioners, discussion? I see none. Mrs. Burns?
Okay. Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes.
Motion carries 8-0.
Thank you.
I'm a yes, but you never.
Oh, I apologize. Rushing.
7-0.
Yes. All right. 8-0. Thank you. Sorry about that.
We have an old sheet, so we're going off of old commissioners' names and trying to fill in the blanks. So, sorry.
Do you want me to keep going?
Yes, ma'am. Got
okay.
One out of 3.
On page 294, residential signs, section 29.4.9. The table 4.9-1, Mrs. Burns, I can give you these when I'm finished.
Super. That'd be great. Thank you.
Table 4.9.-1, residential use signs. Increase the maximum area to 7.5 square feet for single or two-family ID and sale or rent.
Second.
Motion has been made by Mrs. Russell and seconded by Ms. Rushing. Commissioners, Mr. Zinner.
7.5 square feet, is that correct?
Correct.
Yes, 7.5. Commissioners?
Just to put, I'm sorry.
Mr. McMahon?
Thank you. The current is 4 square feet, is that what we are?
Correct.
And those are, for your realtors up here, those are usually like 2x2s. I mean, that's a look, something along those lines.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably just their square parts, 2x2, and then they had the riders and different things added to it, potentially.
Does that include the rider, the 7.5? Or the riders are a separate entity or a separate thing?
Well, they are a separate entity, but this covers the riders.
So the rider?
The riders for them.
Okay, currently, just a point of clarification, currently it's the riders are not included in that 4 square feet. So 7.5 square feet is an expansion, and it also includes any and all riders.
It's an expansion to help them get all of the information they need on their sign and to include the little riders that they're
not. Yeah, I'm with you on the riders. I just want to make sure what we're putting in here. All right, that's what I want to know. Thank you very much.
Ms. Lowe.
The table shows for the sale and rent of multifamily properties, it is also 4 square feet. Do we want to increase that to 7.5 to be consistent with the signs for a single family, or do we expect them to make smaller signs for multifamily properties?
It would make sense because some of those you do have for sale.
Right.
Also.
Mm-hmm. All right, I will add to that under multiple family, sale or rent, increase that to 7.5.
Ms. Rushing, are you okay with that change?
I am.
Thank you. Commissioners, additional discussion? I see none. Ms. Secretary, at your convenience?
Yes. Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Toohey?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Strodeman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Motion carries 8-0.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Mrs. Russell.
On page 295, section 29-4.9, table 4.9-2, residential use sign other. In the column for open house slash model home, increase the maximum area to 7.5.
I have a question. For an open house sign, we're increasing that to 7.5 feet?
Yes.
Generally, those are very small signs.
They still have to have the same information on them, and they're only a temporary sign.
All right. Thank you.
Motion has been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Lowe. Commissioners, discussion. Mr. Harder?
Yeah, sometimes agents put signs, I guess open house signs, riders at the house, but then sometimes they will put them out getting into the neighborhood. Is this going to be the same square footage that will be allowed in getting into the neighborhood? Because that kind of seems a little bit big, I think. Usually they're 2 foot by on a post, and so I did all of it. I mean, I could see from a realtor standpoint, hey, that's more visibility and that kind of stuff, but sometimes people the opening of a subdivision, they might not want to have a sign in front of their house. It's a full real estate sign, but the agent could say, well, it's allowed, so I don't know if that's almost seems a little bit too big if it's off the property.
Mrs. Burns.
I agree with Mr. Harder. I want there to be good signage, but I think the standard for that sign has always been smaller, not the same size as a sign for sale, so I would not be inclined to support that.
Mrs. Russell, I have a question. Maybe Mr. Tui, you could answer. Are the real estate agents required to put their typical sign at the entrance to a subdivision that has, you know, REMAX, the address, the realtor's name, for sale, their logo, and then open house as a rider, or is it just the open house sign that you traditionally see that's just open house with an arrow? Mr. Tui,
I mean, it doesn't have...
They're not required to put the brokerage and the phone number and all of that on an open house sign. So if it gets voted down, I'm not going to have heartburn.
Mr. McMahon?
Do we currently have a standard for these open house signs? I mean, I typically, like with Mr. Harder, I see them. They're 18, 24 inches long. They're 6-8 inches tall. It says open house with an arrow. And there may be a series of them and then perhaps something informational further down the road. Do we have a standard for these signs currently?
There is one in the table.
Specifically
for...
For
open
it's in the table.
Okay.
And in fact, sometimes it's not even for an open house. It's just for a house for sale. I mean, the realtor wants people to know that there's a house for sale in the subdivision. And so they put one out, and then eventually the city either gets a call or they see it, they take it, and they put it, I think, back behind the dumpster
behind the garage.
Of the building. And so I just want to make sure that, I mean, that's as much as I would want to have, advertised to get into a subdivision.
I'll withdraw the motion.
Thank you, Mrs. Russell.
I have another one.
Wait. Okay.
Go ahead, Mrs. Russell.
Section 29.4.9 in the same table, 4.9-2, residential use sign other. For the open house / model home column, change the block other to read, signs shall be permitted 48 hours prior to the time the house is open for viewing and removed 1 hour after closure of viewing time.
Second.
A motion has been made by Mrs. Russell and seconded by Ms. Rushing. Commissioners, do we have any discussion on this amendment?
I apologize, I have one.
Yes, Mr. Herter. You don't have to apologize.
Well, it's the same thing I just talked to you before. If you put a rider in front of a house, sometimes an agent may want it to be out there since from like Tuesday on until Sunday, just so everybody sees. Whereas this one here, I guess, would be more towards bringing people into the subdivision. I don't know if that needs to be clarified or not.
I'm not sure what you're saying.
I think he's saying that you would want the notice more in advance in front of the house than off the property.
It was just 24 to 48 hours. I would see a property owner or his or her agent wanting that to be out there from like Tuesday or Wednesday, because a lot of times it's a rider.
It's not for open house, it's generally not a rider. It's a separate sign.
Separate sign, okay.
So to have that out in addition to the other one would be a little bit much, I think.
I think this allows
them time to put it up before the open house when it's like daylight and leave it up even if they're having it through the weekend and then take it down Sunday afternoon.
That clarifies it. Thanks.
Commissioners, any additional discussion? As I see none, Mrs. Secretary, when you are ready.
Yes. Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Tui.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Motion carries 8-0.
Thank you, Commissioners. Mrs. Russell, you're looking at me like you have another one.
I do.
Keep going.
Under preliminary plat review, page 344, section 29.5.4. Under 3, procedure, IV, preliminary plat review. G, number 4. change the number one-third of the preliminary approved lots to one-fourth of the preliminary approved lots.
Motion has been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Lowe. Motion has been made by Mrs. Russell and seconded by Ms. Lowe regarding the number of requirements for the preliminary approved lots from one-third to one-fourth. Commissioners, discussion on that amendment. Mr. McMahon.
We had discussed this previously as one of the, Ms. Russell, one of the, not guarantors, but elements of also reducing the time to 3 years. Was this was part and parcel of that or in relationship to that? Is that correct?
Right. The next motion covers the timing.
Okay.
Any additional questions, commissioners? I see none. Mrs. Burns, when you're ready.
Yes. Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Motion carries 8-0.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Mrs. Russell.
It's my last one. Preliminary plat review, page 344, section 29.5.4, under 3 procedure, IV preliminary plat review, under G, number 5, change the verbiage to read, the director may grant a one-year extension if no change to a city ordinance would require a change in the plat. Appeal for an adverse decision shall be made to the city council. Any subsequent extensions shall be made to city council for a specified period on such terms and conditions as the council may approve.
Second.
An amendment to the motion has been made by Mrs. Russell and seconded by Ms. Lowe. Commissioners, discussion? Ms. Lowe.
Mr. Zenner, you were going to check on us to confirm the director could extend that 1 year or provide that 1 year extension?
On the preliminary platting, it was our position that because this is not dealing with a zoning authorization, this would be consistent. That is what we have found in our other research. If we're told otherwise, we'll let you know. It's the zoning one as it relates to all extensions right. That we have not been able to obtain the information on.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any additional? As I see none, Mrs. Burns, when you're ready.
Yes. Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
8-0, motion carries.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns.
I'm finished.
Sure. Ms. Lowe.
Page 291, Neighborhood Protection Standards. Item 29-4.8. C. Item 1, I would like to make a motion to change the words the side and rear to contiguous side and rear. Also want to change the verbiage in item 2. Should I make that part of the same motion?
You can.
Okay, so item 2. Add language along contiguous side and rear lot lines.
Second.
All within C.
All within C.
A motion has been made by Ms. Lowe, seconded by Mrs. Russell. Commissioners, discussion on this amendment? As I see none, Mrs. Burns, when you're ready.
Yes, Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder? Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
8-0, motion carries.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Ms. Lowe?
On page 172, sorry, I'm still want to be in neighborhood. My reference, not my actual.
A good thing, huh? Segment four.
Anyone else can jump in while I'm reevaluating my reference.
Floor is open, commissioners, if anybody else would like to make a motion.
Chill out for a while.
Chill out? Ms. Rushen says we'll just chill out.
Actually, I've got a question for staff. In section 29-4.9 with parking, loading, and circulation, would the Conley Walmart and Lowe's and Sam's and that whole development, would that not be possible with the way Section E was written?
What page is that, Mr.?
Sorry.
292. We're referring to the driveway locations for parking, loading, and circulation within neighborhood protection. Top of 292.
So your thought, Mr. Tuohy, is there's no driveway or a...
Well, there's a fire lane in the back of that,
yeah,
that building. So would that type of setup not be... You wouldn't be able to do that anymore, correct, if this were to pass this way?
I would tell you that it's in the first item underneath E... it says that you can't have a drive lane or circulation aisles between the principal structure, which would be Walmart, Hy-Vee, Lowe's, Sam's, and on a lot adjacent to a lot containing a single or a two-family structure. So in that particular instance, no, this would not prohibit that because the parcel to which that development abuts does not have single-family or two-family structures on it. I think when we evaluate a development plan as a part of our site plan review processes prior to the issuance of a building permit, which is conducted by our fire marshals within the city as well as our building and our site development staff, situations where you may have an adjacent residential structure, single or two-family, and a larger commercial building, we would have to identify what routes or alternatives exist in being able to meet the fire code standards themselves. Item two would allow the director the authority to have that circulation aisle placed between that adjacent residential structure and the larger commercial development, provided there was a 6-foot buffer and a screening device installed. If that were the only option that would assure that the fire code would be met. It is not an uncommon situation in where we have buildings that do not necessarily have circulation all the way around them. Topography may limit that occasionally. or it is otherwise not desirable to do so from either the developer's perspective or even from the city's perspective to have that. And this particular standard, as well as our relationship with the fire marshals and the fire code, allow us that flexibility. The fire code is very prescriptive as to its minimum standards, as to what we are trying to achieve. It does not necessarily give prescriptive solutions as to how to achieve meeting the fire code. That latitude is granted to the fire official himself and our code officials as they apply the standards. So it's a very coordinated effort. So I would tell you that E does not preclude a building potentially by having a circulation aisle around it, nor does it mandate through the fire code that circulation be provided all the way around every building. Scale does matter. That is the conversation I have had recently with the fire marshal's office. So as buildings do get larger, we do require more access to ensure that every point of that building is within 150 feet the fire service's reach. That doesn't necessarily mean that 150 feet has to be via paved surface. So sometimes, as long as you can come back around a residential lot and get to the backside center of that building from one side, from the principal street, you're within 150 feet, you're good. And if you come around the opposite side and you have that same 150-foot hose length, you're good. It doesn't mean you have to put a driveway down into the backyard to get into the property. So that was how it was explained to me today. And that, to an extent, I believe, answers Mr. Crawford's question as it related to a concern of the disconnect between this particular section and the actual fire code itself. And unfortunately for the commission, you don't see this on a permitting side. We do, however, as staff. There is a lot of negotiation and a lot of evaluation of options as it relates to meeting the fire code standards. Each site's different, so therefore we have to evaluate them a little bit differently, and the code is not so prescriptive to say one solution fits all.
Yeah, I just want to get a clarification on that.
Commissioners?
Ms. Lowe.
I apologize for my confusion, but it was page 172, and I realize this is outside of sections 5 and 6, but it's an item that's been brought up as part of the discussion of 5 and 6, which is the front yard, median front yard setback, which is not covered separately in the protective neighborhood standards. So I would like to make the motion tonight just to address that point that's been brought up, if that's acceptable.
Mr. Senator.
Ms. Lowe, you said 272?
172.
Thank you. I'm looking at 272. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, it's not even there. Okay.
Well, way out of section 5.
172. It's in 4.1.
I think if we're trying to address the issue as it relates to neighborhood protections, I see Ms. Lowe's point, and I do not see any reason that it cannot be addressed at this point, so we can potentially resolve this matter.
I think it would add to the discussion
as well. We'll make notation accordingly, so in my record as well as in the formal minutes, we'll know where we made this amendment under what meeting.
So item 29-4.1B1. Item 1I, sorry, add a sentence to the end of that paragraph stating that in no case shall the setback be less than the minimum setback established in table 4.1-3 unless granted by waiver.
Second.
Ms. Lowe has made a motion, has been made by Ms. Lowe and has been seconded by Mrs. Russell. Commissioners, discussion, questions? I see none. Mrs. Burns, when you're ready.
Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Motion carries 8-0.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Commissioners, additional amendments? Give me a second. I'm going to put my head down for a second.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Zinner.
You all are searching. I would like to bring your attention to an item that was brought forth at our last meeting, which also, not unlike Ms. Lowe's amendment, does have relevance to the particular section at hand, specifically as it relates to a reference, a cross-reference to the requirement of landscaping for neighborhood protection, a portion of which we took out. So if you go to page 291 of your code, 29-4.8, section D or paragraph D, you will recall we took out everything after the standards of section 29-4.5E apply. It was brought to our attention that the table, which is 29-4.5E, which is our property edge buffering table, does not include a two-family designation. It includes single-family, multifamily, mixed-use, commercial, and industrial. So if, in fact, you happen to have a multifamily structure, i.e. an apartment building being built against a two-family structure, you have no reference back to what is the screening device or landscaping buffer that should be placed there. There is a gap in the buffer table, in the transition and screening table. I would suggest that the solution to this is to make a motion to add in the columns that the column and the row that say single family, change that to be single and two family, not only in the vertical column, but also in the horizontal row that has that same heading.
Mr. McMahon.
I will make that motion.
Thank you for that motion, Mr. McMahon.
Second.
Ms. Lowe. We have a motion that was made by Mr. McMahon and seconded by Ms. Lowe. Commissioners, discussion? I see none. Mrs. Secretary, whenever you're ready.
Sure. Who do I start with? Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Tui.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Motion carries 8-0.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Ms. Lowe.
I do have another motion. On page 364, I think this is still in segment 6, nonconforming uses. Item 29-5.5E4, any redevelopment of the property that results in the demolition of all or part of an existing principal structure shall require the property be brought into compliance with all applicable requirements of the ordinance. And going through my notes, it was pointed out to us that this was a bit ambiguous. I would have to agree. On the preceding page, under 29-5.52I, it identifies that if a structure is damaged or destroyed by an act of God, and the damage does not exceed 75%, that it may be rebuilt in the existing. So it has set a threshold of 75%. I'm wondering if a better phrase here would just be to establish a threshold to say, if I'm damaging or demolishing my own building more than 75%, then it will need to meet all current codes. Or if we're doing it out of own free will, is it at a different threshold? Right now it says all or part. It's the part that's ambiguous.
Mrs. Burns.
Could we make it match with 75%?
That seems, well, it makes sense that if you're changing up to 75%, you can change up to 75% of your building without needing to meet the current.
For a non-conforming use.
Standards.
For a non-conforming.
Same thing with damage or destruction.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would submit the damage or destruction is not an action. Mm-hmm. May I go ahead, Mr. Strupp? Thank you. Is not an action. It was an action outside the control of the owner. It's totally, you know, an act of God. Tornado, earthquake, fire. Not their deal. If I want to redevelop and I have a non-conforming use, and I can tear down 75% of my building, I could see 25%. This is a non-conforming use, because that can cover lots and lots and lots of things.
Mr. Zinner, is it?
We're wandering off maybe and forgetting what the heading types are here. You have in the 75%, where we talk about 75%, we're talking about non-conforming use.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a non-conforming structure. Then you get into non-conforming lots. And you're talking about non-conforming site features, I believe, Ms. Lowe. This is a site feature.
Well, it says non-conforming land uses and structures.
Well, in the land use, I would imagine is meant to be more to the usage of the land. So, for example, if this is an R, if the land is being used for storage and it has historically been being used as it, and that's an R1 zoning district, that land use is not a conforming land use. So it is a non-conforming land use in that zoning district.
Okay, but that item says any redevelopment of the property that results in the demolition of all or part of an existing principal structure.
Incorrect. And or construction of a new principal structure shall require. So this is a lot that may have, and I would tend to agree with you, it seems odd, but this is basically referring to the fact that if you were using that lot as some non-conforming use and it had a structure on it, let's just say a storage building, and you decide that you want to tear that building down, that lot is going to need to become compliant. You know, any redevelopment of the property that results in the demolition of all or part of an existing principal structure. So the land use may have a supporting structure with it that was there, but it's still a non-conforming land use in that zoning district.
But at the beginning, it talks about conforming land uses and structures, and it's just evidently other things that are not would be non-conforming.
Mr. Zinner, can you, off the top of your head, give me an example here in Columbia of what the section of the ordinance that you're referring to? I mean, is there something I can wrap my head around here?
Not removal of a building, but there's already parking facilities, and it's the desire of the individual rebuilding a completely new building to reuse those parking lots. But there's some aspects of it that don't conform to current ordinance. This would give the authority to bring,
the entire lot into.
Well, because they're doing a total knockdown of the building, and likewise, it's lacking landscaping.
So the crux of, as it's written, is principal structure. Principal structure could be a business or it could be a shed, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so it it hangs on principal structure. Is that how you read that? Okay.
I mean, I think the other example, Tim, if I'm correct, would be the VW, the Beetle repair place that's off of Greasy, mm-hmm. which has been, I think, a junkyard. It was a junkyard. It's not, doesn't meet any of the junkyard requirements. We had a bunch of.
And as long as he keeps that there, he's okay. But once he knocks down the garage-esque thing he's got going there, he's got to redevelop.
Yeah, it would have so to come into compliance.
Under Miss, let me just give me, make sure I'm following. Under Miss Lowe, under your amendment, he has two bays. I think he has two bays. So he can knock down 1.5 bays and keep his junkyard.
Well, that would be demolition. That would be because we're this says specifically demolition of part of the principal structure. So if you demolish part of that building, the lot needs to be brought into compliance.
Are you trying, may I ask a question to clarify? Are you trying to, the way it's written right now, it seems to say all or part.
It does say all or part.
It does say all or part, okay. Which means I do anything and I've got to bring it back.
Demolish.
Demolish, okay.
Not rebuild, not renovate, demolish.
Well, redevelopment is defined within the code. So, I mean, again, we've got a definition of what constitutes redevelopment. So, and that may involve demolition of all or part of an existing principal structure and or construction of a new principal structure. So if you wanted to leave your dilapidated shack on the property and then build a brand new one, you'd have to bring the property into compliance. So it covers both demolition of all or part of the nonconforming structure or the new construction of a structure or construction of a new principal structure.
Mrs. Russell?
So if you have a two-story building and the stairwell is falling apart and you decide that you want to demolish that part of the building and put up a new stairwell, this says you have to take the whole thing down and comply.
Not the whole building, but it does say the site features have to be brought into compliance. It says with all applicable requirements.
Mr. McMahon?
Help me, Mr. Zinn here. Ms. Russell, I think that's a wonderful point. If they're all inside, that's not redevelopment, right?
That'd be correct. It would have
if
to
it
be
just, I mean, as long as we don't out. Have to take the outside of the building off, the stairs could be brought up to code or repaired or whatever.
And I would
you have to just tear down part of the building, including an exterior wall, to redo this stairwell.
But if you're not so if you go up to item number 2, the expansion, revision, or redevelopment must not increase any nonconformity with the standards of, and that's basically landscaping, parking. So it would be parking, landscaping, and then the other one is the building design. So if your building's already nonconforming, you're replacing a dilapidated or safety hazard stairwell, it's not going to trigger tearing the rest of the building down. You're not going to increase the level of nonconformity by repairing that dysfunctional component of the building. So that would be, it would not. And as long as you're not in item 3, the expansion or change, if you're going to expand or you're going to change the land use, it doesn't increase the amount of parking required, you're also not going to become compliant. So you can take that nonconforming use of that land and be able to reuse it. I think, Tim, would this not have corrected maybe part of what we had with Great Hangups as part of its problem initially? Mm-hmm. As a nonconforming land use and the use of the reuse of the building was not going to be any more intense than what was there previously?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's meant to show those conditions under which changes can be made to an existing improved property without completely bringing things like lighting, which might be lighting pole height or might be their specifications, landscaping, which might be the density of plantings and screening and such, and then parking, which, you know,
parking lot
design features and also numbers of spaces.
Go back to, and Mr. Land's going to thank me dearly for this. Let's go to the business loop for just a minute. A lot of nonconforming structures. I'm sorry, guys. A lot of non-conforming structures, and we've given exemptions under 10,000, correct? They have an exemption under 10,000. All those places, the lots are too small. They don't meet the building code, or they may or may not meet the building code. Parking is a big issue, and lighting is a big issue. Mr. Ennis's place, for instance, he re-tuck points, he's okay. He tears down a back wall to move it, he has a problem, and he has to rebuild. Is that a correct scenario? He re-tuck points his building, and that's fine because he hasn't demolished it, but if he has to take a wall down, he's engaged an exterior wall for whatever repair, then he's triggered the part section?
No, I don't think so. If there's no expansion involved, if it's one out of four walls, it's probably not enough to be considered demolition. I mean, you're demolishing in the sense that you're removing a wall, but there is a definition of demolition, mm-hmm. and it's percentage of front facade or percentage of total perimeter. I think you have to take down half the walls around the perimeter.
To trigger? There's a trigger
under
there?
Under the building code. That's a building code.
That's a building code issue.
Aside, you remove that, and that's considered demo as well.
This is something else that someone, I'm sorry for sucking up some time, because early on, and it's probably May or June, some folks were talking, particularly the Business Loop people, were talking about, and some others brought this up too, a 25% requirement. And I'm not sure exactly where they were all going. And then we responded with the under 10,000, you know, getting these people, allowing them flexibility. I think they still have their flexibility here, Ms. Lowe. Are you, Ms. Russell, shaking her head no? And I'm not sure I'm following you, Ms. Russell.
I think the term or part is the thing that we're tripping over. And I think if our part was removed.
Ms. Lowe?
My concern is that this could, for people with non-conforming properties, should they be deciding or engaging in deferred maintenance questions, be hesitant to take those on and even approach city staff about them if they feel they might be engaging or be required to then change uses. So I think the clearer we can be about what would trip this and what wouldn't would be nice.
Yeah, you don't want it to be a disincentive to make things like partial rebuilds that actually cure obsolescence, like mm-hmm. the stair shaft example.
Right,
they're bringing
life
that
safety
up to code.
Or,
that's a
correct.
Desirable improvement. You don't want to say, "Well, you're a lucky winner; you get to redo your landscaping and striping while you're at it." So we don't want to do that.
And I'm not sure, given the conversation we've just had, if you take or part out. I think what we have to be cautious of right now with this, and the or part is where, yes, you're stumbling over, and what is the disincentive clause here. We need to be careful that a demolition, a partial demolition that demolishes more of a building that then, that the building code would then conclude that that building is actually demolished. So if you remove more than whatever the building code's definition of not falling under demolition is, that's what we have to figure out how do you say here. And I don't know if it's at 75%, Ms. Lowe. I don't know what that magic number may be, but we may need to make some reference back to, demolition as determined by the building code, the adopted building code, or greater than. I guess what you could do, you could do two. You could do demolition as defined by the adopted building code or greater than 75%. I mean, if you wanted to do that way, that would provide you, if you're making modifications that are over 75% to the building, that guarantees that the site's then being brought up into code. Because that may not trigger demolition under the building code, but that may be you've gone to the scale of improvement or redevelopment of that site that it does need to be addressed. Now, if I can, just for context, as I said, redevelopment is defined within the code, and while maybe not an ideal surrogate for this particular section, because this is really dealing with building structure modification, the definition, I believe, for redevelopment deals more with land. Redevelopment is defined in the code on page 41 as development that, one, expands or replaces any development and is on a site that has not been subdivided after September 4th, 2012, and is on a site that is either A, 1 acre or more that has an impervious surface area more than 12% of the site, or B, less than 1 acre that has any impervious surface. I emphasize the ands. It's and then you have two ors. You have an option in that third item. All three of those have to come together in order for it to be considered redevelopment. Those ands are very important because you just don't read them in a vacuum. But this is generally, that definition of redevelopment comes directly out of our stormwater ordinance. It was carried forward so we could define what development or redevelopment meant in the context of subdivision and some of our other provisions that we have within the code, such as landscaping, treatment, and things of that nature. Because often that's the discussion we get into as a site's being incrementally redeveloped. What is happening is that one first redevelopment activity actually truly redevelopment, and does that require then that you need to upgrade some aspect of the site? So I'll go back to the principal question at hand. If you remove or part out of this 29-5.5 D item number 4, and you were to replace that with any redevelopment of a property that results in the demolition of all of an existing principal structure in accordance with the adopted building code, or demolition greater than 75% of the existing structure, and or construction of a new principal structure shall require that the property be brought into compliance with all applicable requirements of this ordinance. I think that does two things. It gives you a threshold, a maximum threshold, and then it gives you the minimum threshold of what would be demolition if it's less by the building code.
Mr. McMahon?
Just your last or, would it be more effective to put whichever is less or? You understand what I'm saying? Because what the IBC determines and what 75% and may not be the same number. And they may be in conflict with each other. I'm concerned that by rectifying an amorphous term, and we put these competing interests in there that cannot be met. And I don't know what the IBC says off the top of my head.
My only fear would be either or whichever is the lessor.
Mm-hmm.
If in all instances the building code becomes the lessor of the demolition, of what would define demolition, I think what you do is you disincentivize the renovation, as Mr. Teddy was saying, obsolete buildings, because all of a sudden you're basically saying, well, I'm just going to let it rot on the site until I absolutely have to tear it down because I can't do anything else with it. There's no possibly incentive at that point to preserve maybe what is still a structurally sound building.
I think that's a sound I think it's a very sound argument. The disincentive is a sound argument, but you brought me to another argument. We have property owners who do that very thing that you're concerned about right now. They literally let them sit and rot. And it doesn't make sense for me. I'm not in that tax bracket, you know. But I'm sure that's the only way that makes sense sometimes. I think it was one of the, in some of my conversations with Mr. Elliott, he used a term I can't use here, but there was a desire to incentivize them to do something with these properties. You know, that because I said, what do we do about these? I said, they need something about a boot. There was a boot mentioned in there. I'm just going to make sure we're not going the other way. That's all. I get what you're saying. The part thing is very important. What does that mean if I'm a builder or if I'm a redeveloper? What does it mean? And I don't know what that means.
Ms. Lowe?
Hasn't the property adopted the property maintenance code? Or hasn't the city adopted the property maintenance code?
Yeah.
So we do have a code in place to address that if it's enforced.
I appreciate all references.
I would like to go ahead and make a motion for 29-5.5 if there's no further discussion on it.
In charge.
29-5.5, item D4. Revise it to read, any redevelopment of the property. In my head, this was going a little bit differently, so. That results in the demolition of the existing principal structure as defined by the adopted building code. Mr. Zenner, yours was better. That results in the demolition of the existing principal structure as defined by the adopted building code, or is more than 75% of the building, and or construction of a new principal structure shall require that the property be brought into compliance with all applicable requirements of this ordinance.
Does that work, Mr. Zenner?
Yes, that'll work.
I'll second that.
Ms. Lowe has motion has been made put on the table for from Ms. Lowe and seconded by Mrs. Russell. Commissioners, discussion on this amendment? As I see none, Mrs. Secretary, when you're ready.
Yes. Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
No.
Mr. Stradman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Motion carries 7-0. 7-1, I apologize.
7-1. Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Commissioners, additional items? Mrs. Burns.
It wasn't a motion, it was just a clarification that we've taken care of this. I have in my notes about in the conditional use table to strike conditional use. As a conditional use is unnecessary, as you only have permanent uses in planned districts. Something we discussed, and I apologize for not having more reference to this.
Farnan.
Yes.
Yeah, this was in relationship to Mr. Farnan's
yes, about
concern.
The table.
What was the page number on that?
Well, this was a page we didn't have the correct page number.
Oh, it was page 82 because it's back in the very beginning of the code.
Page 82?
Yes, if I recall correctly. That's why I couldn't find it initially. And it had to deal with a clarification. I don't believe it was really a...
That's a different... It's, yeah, it's a different number.
It's on page...
Not 291. That was another option.
No, it's on. It is on page 83. I apologize. Page 83 of the code, it's under the planned district requirements, and the reference that we had discussed about has to deal with what is underneath permitted and was previously headed and conditional uses. And the clarity that was needed here really is to adjust, if I recall correctly, paragraph 1. Underneath this, so if you're under permitted uses now, bottom of page 83, item number 1, it should read an application for rezoning to a plan district shall identify which of the uses listed in table 29-3.1 permitted use table will be permitted will be the table reference we have in the reference here in paragraph 1 we actually have permitted use table is the name of table 29-3.1. It is possible what we can do here in order to address what Mr. Farnan's concern was is to take out of the parentheses permitted use table. So you just refer to table 29-3.1 hyphen permitted use table. and basically will be allowed instead of permitted, allowed uses in all or specific portions of the PD district. That's the first pass added, and then the second one would be to, after uses in the first paragraph or in the first line, an application for rezoning to a planned district shall identify which of the uses, parentheses, is where we would begin this, permitted, conditional, temporary, or accessory, listed in Table 29-3.1, permitted hyphen permitted use table, will be allowed uses in all or specific portions of the PD. That was the clarification that was confusing. The way that this reads, it appears to read as though conditional uses from the permitted use table would not be allowed, when in fact that was not what was intended. What was intended was to ensure that when you create a plan district, you are not creating conditional uses that would be required to go through the Board of Adjustment process or the Planning Commission after going through the lengthy PD process to establish the zoning on that land. So by adding after uses in the first line in parentheses, all of the different types of uses that are in Table 29-3.1, it should be inclusive enough that people understand you can select a permitted use, you could select a conditional use, you could select a temporary or an accessory use as an allowed use on that PD property. And that's, I believe, where the confusion may have existed as it's currently written. And we can, again, it's a new approach that we're taking here. The clarification of the change can be made in the side margin note so folks understand why we did what we were doing. And it was to clarify, in fact, the conditional uses. You don't have a by right conditional use in a plan district. You actually have only allowed uses.
Mrs. Burns?
So do we need a motion on this?
I definitely would suggest that, yes, you do have a motion to add after that first uses in item number one under permitted uses now on page 83, permitted, conditional, accessory, temporary. Those captured in parentheses, and then basically just add a hyphen after 29-3.1 hyphen permitted use table will be, and then strike permitted in the last sentence and make that allowed, will be allowed uses in all or specific portions of the PD district.
Okay.
Have
we captured that to the satisfaction, or do I need to repeat that for the motion?
So Mrs. Burns is making a motion.
On page 83, in section 29-3.1.
2.2.
This is where we're adding add permitted, conditional, and accessory and temporary to the verbiage.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Do you want me to read?
Make
that'd
a motion? Be great. Thank you.
Okay.
Mrs. Russell, would you like to make a motion?
Okay. On page 83, section 29.2.2, base zoning districts under permitted uses, number one, after the word uses, add in parentheses, permitted use, conditional use, accessory use, conditional accessory use, and temporary use, end parentheses, in table 29-3.1, hyphen, permitted use table will be allowed in all or specific portions of the PD district.
I'll second that.
Motion has been put by Mrs. Russell and seconded by Mrs. Burns. Commissioners, discussion on this amendment? As I see none, Mrs. Burns, when you're ready.
Yes. Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Motion carries 8-0.
Thank you, Mrs. Burns. Additional amendments, commissioners? Anything else? Ms. Lowe, are you making notes? Or are you?
I'm making notes.
No.
No catching motion, up.
No amendments.
Sorry.
If there's no further discussion, then we'll close this part of the meeting. Everybody's good with that? Yeah? We'll close that. Now, this is a little different.
Do we adjourn to?
We wrap up our meeting like we normally would.
Yep, so comments of the public. Comments of the staff.
Just so we have for the public's information, the Planning Commission has previously discussed that we'll be adjourning this meeting and convening back into a work session to discuss additional items that may be presented as amendments either following the final public discussion at the December 15th meeting or that may be introduced at the January 5th public hearing that we will have as a terminal public hearing on the code as it is proposed to have completed its public process at that point. We will have for the public for the January 5th meeting a revised errata sheet that does identify all of the code amendments that have been made through the public hearing processes since the October 20th hearing. We have an errata sheet that is out currently that has all of the amendments that have been made through the November 16th meeting, and that will be appended to with any additional changes made from this evening's meeting, as well as those that will be proposed at the December 15th meeting. We will be starting our meeting here at 6 p.m. on the 15th. The only item on that agenda is the final public comment associated with the Unified Development Code and then any additional amendments that the Commission may desire to make at that time. So with that, that is all we have to offer at this point. We will adjourn at your leisure.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. That's one of your shorter wrap-ups. Commissioners, any comments from commissioners? If not, do we have a adjournment motion?
Move to adjourn.
We have a second.
Yes, second.
We're all in favor of that. Thumbs up. We'll be moving over next door. 10 minutes, commissioners.